550, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Matt Patrick here. Usually on Tuesdays, Brett Johnson joins us. He's on vacation, enjoying a little bit of early holiday time off, which leads me to have to talk to the excellent people over at the Minnesota Reformer. Now, first of all, I'm going to just say this. If you're not reading the Minnesota Reformer every day, you're just wrong. You are just wrong. It is an absolutely must-stop news source for me every single day. Sign up, help support them as well. The exceptional Dina Winter is kind enough to join us to talk about covering the Potter trial. She's been watching that for the Minnesota Reformer. Dina, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
My pleasure. Today, let's talk a little bit about what happened today. You've been watching this trial. What was kind of the main focus on the testimony today?
Well, today it was a little more focused on the policies that they have out in Brooklyn Center and whether Kimberly Potter was following them correctly, you know, how to use your taser, what the policies are for firing into a vehicle if someone's trying to flee and so on. So I guess you may have heard that the judge at one point had the jurors stand up and stretch, and there was some speculation as to whether they were dozing off. And I wasn't in the courtroom today. I'm kind of listening with one ear, but the pool reporter for the day said that there was a juror dozing off. So that might give you an indication of how the testimony is being received today.
It's a little dry. Now I'm going to go out on a ledge here. There is nothing in the manuals for the police department up there that says, oh yeah, this is what you do, accidentally confuse your firearm, your service weapon as a taser and shoot for the heart. I'm going to imagine that the prosecutor is trying their best to make, I'm presuming this is the prosecutor and they're talking about this at this point, but they're trying to make the argument that there's nothing here in these books that justifies anything that she's done.
No, I mean, but they did delve into whether it's okay to fire your weapon into a vehicle with someone, you know, some of the risks associated with that, because of course the defense is saying, you know, getting witnesses to say that actually that deadly force would have been justifiable. So they're kind of delving into some of that too.
Well, let's, if you don't mind, let's go back to that a little bit, because the way that I've read and followed this as well, I'm not there either, but I mean, it's the way I've read and followed this too. It's this if he would have taken off, if he would have been dragging the officer, if he would have gotten hurt, if it was dangerous, then okay, this was justified. Which even here's the problem that they had is that the former supervisor for her that basically was trying to create this excuse for Kim Potter to shoot, that there was going to be something that happened. He, at the end of his testimony, had to admit, well, no, Dante Wright hadn't left the scene at the time he was shot. You know, it was pure speculation that was going to happen. So it's going to be one of those things where if you get a person who is, you know, unapologetically pro-police, that might resonate. But the reality is I think that even with what the defense is trying to do, it's a bit of a hard sell, because it's got to go with that. If this would have happened, if then this would have happened, if then this would have happened, no, then it would have been deadly force justified. And it doesn't seem like that they have that argument there. I've not seen more than one person, though, say that she has had the justification to shoot in this case. Has there been more?
I think there have been two now.
Okay.
I do believe there have been two, because by my count. So there was one. I know there was one Friday when I was in the courtroom, and then I believe there's been another one since. And then there was a motion by the prosecution to limit them from saying that, basically. So, but they were denied on that. So.
Well, it's purely speculative. It's interesting that they're allowing that, because once again, it's like saying, if I'm on the defendant, would you be able to say, and if it was a robbery case, well, if this TV had actually fallen out in the sidewalk and not been in the store, and if I would have picked it up then, well, it was basically been mine. I was just picking finders keepers, so they should give it to me, and no one would follow that argument. I mean, when you get into the speculative nature sometimes, and I don't understand the law sometimes, I really don't, but it would seem to me that if you have to put about six ifs in front of a statement to justify the actions that actually did happen, I don't know if you've got a solid case. That's just me, though. That's just me.
Well, but I did talk to a former prosecutor today who was he's written that he doesn't think the case is winnable because there have been several Supreme Court decisions that would buttress saying that it is okay to shoot at a suspect trying to evade arrest in a car, basically. And he thinks that even if she get thrown out on appeal, basically.
Yeah.
That's what he thinks. But so it's kind of interesting, you know. That's, I suppose, why they're really focusing on that issue is, you know, the shooting at someone fleeing. So.
Yeah. It's one of those rulings, and I say it, and I don't have, and this is me saying it. This is not you saying it. This is me saying it. It's one of those rulings that is basically saying, yeah, well, black people, when stuff like this happens, we need to basically make sure there's cover, because the reality is that it's inexcusable that when you have in Dante Wright's case, he didn't commit any serious felonies. He was basically, there was a warrant out for his arrest, an air freshener hanging down. That's not the last time I checked, that shouldn't be an instantaneous death penalty, handed out by an officer who can't figure out whether she's got her taser or her gun in her hand. And so I think that that's the argument. And by the way, if I can bring that up.
Absolutely. And that prosecutor agrees with that, with you on that. That is, yeah, no, that's not how we, it's a tragedy all around.
Well, and as I brought that up, one of the things that's interesting is, can you counter that argument, the eventual appeal, if that's where this goes? With the argument, well, she herself has admitted she grabbed the wrong weapon. She didn't grab a taser. Yeah. She grabbed her service weapon. Does she herself, by her own acknowledgement in the body cam videos, negate any potential for saying, well, yeah, if she would have just intentionally drawn the weapon, is that a better appeal than her admission that I thought I had the taser?
Well, that's for an attorney.
I don't know. That's more just me thinking off the head. But that's an interesting one. I love your story, by the way, Dina. Speaking of the taser and the gun, I love your story where you showed the differences between the service weapon and the taser. And the reason why is that there were a lot of defenders of Kim Potter prior to the trial. Not saying that they were associated with the defense, but people that were out there clearly trying to make an argument for Kim Potter that she didn't do anything wrong, that did not have that taser. They had a black taser that looked very similar to the service weapon. They said, see, it'd be easy to screw up. Well, no, that wasn't the taser they used. And when you look at the picture that's associated with your article, and once again, go to the Minnesota Reformer and see this. I highly encourage it. You look at this as like, she confused those two? Because I can also tell you this, as a person that was in the military and fired a pistol, you put a loaded magazine into a pistol, that's going to weigh a ton more than a taser.
Yeah, they said twice as much.
Yeah.
I mean, when loaded, they said in court when I was there yesterday. So, I mean, it's interesting because, and I've tried in my mind, tried to think of how, you know, that might happen too. And I'm thinking, well, how often are they doing shooting practice and all that? You know what I mean? They're just that rote memory, whatever, you know, I don't know. I don't have the answer to that, but I'm sure we'll hear from her on that issue.
Well, and
how did you do that? How could you do that?
It is interesting. I mean, I will say this, it clearly from the body cam footage, she clearly was showing remorse for her actions. She clearly was in to a point where even the other officers had removed her service weapon and taken the bullets out of the one that they put back into her holster as a way to basically prevent her from possibly hurting herself. But at the same time, I mean, we have to have, if we have a factory collapse because a person who's unqualified to be on a forklift drives into a foundation structure and then knocks the whole thing down and people are killed, well, the person that was driving the forklift, it might be an accident, but they're still responsible for the action. And I think this is where it's an interesting thing is, do we really have where that's not an option for the police, that the police can really screw up on a magnitude where there's a dead person at the end of the day and there aren't any consequences?
Well, this prosecutor I was mentioning was saying, he wrote in an article that they should really, you got to go talk to the legislature about creating maybe some type of sanctions for that sort of thing. Because he thinks they're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, you know, with this case. So There you go.
Well, that's interesting, too. Once again, pure speculation on what happened to the case. If Potter is found to be innocent, I guarantee you there's going to be a push in St. Paul to pass a piece of legislation that says if you accidentally shoot someone with a gun instead of a taser, you do not have, you know, qualified immunity. I have zero doubt the Republicans will block it. You know, my God, they wouldn't even, you know, prevent from, you know, white supremacists from becoming cops, for goodness sakes. So, you know, I have zero doubt the Republicans would block it, but I think they'll at least be this idea that that's got to be something. You can't have people making that level life or death mistakes in a position of power like that.
Yeah. So we'll see.
All right.
Guess we'll see what happens with this one.
And a little bit more here. And once again, Dina Winter joining us from Minnesota Reformer on this case. Do you feel as a person that's paying more attention to this, do you feel that the defense is making the argument as you watch this? Or, who do you feel is, obviously the prosecution team has their game plan. The defense team has their game plan. As far as you've seen here, who do you think is making the better argument at this point?
Well, that's a tough one for a reporter. I mean, you sort of sit there and think. I was thinking to myself, the reporter would tell the story and stick, get to the point and kind of stick to it. And these things just they have to do the whole dragging things out with chain of custody and all this other stuff that just tends to get. And I thought, well, that's just me because I'm a journalist and I don't know how you convict a person. But, like this prosecutor was telling me today that he feels like they're putting on a lot of evidence and dragging things out, too, that, a lot of evidence is not in dispute by the defense. And so it's not really clear why they're spending so much time on it. He feels like to try to make it look like they have more evidence than they do, but I don't know. I'm not sure who's winning, and I think it's really impossible to say when it comes to juries. But
that was
his take on it, and I kind of felt like too, like it's you've got jurors falling asleep at this point.
Well, the two points. First of all, it is not fair for me to answer because you are a journalist and you are a very good journalist, and journalists do tell the story. They don't get in there. Apologies for that. I shouldn't have asked you that question. And you're right. You can say, well, it looks overwhelmingly like this person is destroying the person, but then the jury comes back on the other side. How many times has that happened? It has a lot.
Yeah.
So I guess it wasn't a fair question to ask, but I will say this. Your observation, the fact that it's interesting that they are trying to lay out so much information. Putting it back on the Chauvin trial and the way that they, meticulously laid out that case. And there it seemed like, though, what you had was witnesses that brought bang for the buck. And as much as the defense, and wasn't exactly the greatest defense lawyer of all time, but the way the defense tried to charge that, he just kept getting knocked down because the prosecution's witnesses were that good. But in this case, it seems different because, like I said, when you're having to have the jury stand up to stretch and not yawn or fall asleep, your presentation is lacking in pizzazz. How about we put it that way?
Well, I've covered a few trials in my time, but I've never seen. I was a little bit shocked to see her do that because, she just interrupted the prosecutor like in the middle of his questioning of a wit, to do that, and so everybody was like, well, something must have been going on there. Like, was someone sleeping or what? So with the Chauvin case, you had, the police chief get up on the stand and say this was wrong. And other police employees in this case, they're having to come and testify against their former coworker too, but you're not getting this adamant, declarations like you did with the Chauvin case. So it is, they're saying, several have admitted, they know her, they like her, or, even a BCA agent, her husband was friends with her husband. I mean, these BCA agents are often former cops in, smaller towns or mid-sized towns. And so they're so interwoven, but you're not having those witnesses like you did in Chauvin's that are
Well, and
coming right out and saying this was wrong.
Well, in Chauvin too, it was. They tried, the defense tried the if sort of thing, where you know, if this was the case, if this was this. Oh, thank God they did what they did, and it just fell flat because. And I really do. I think that the prosecution team there had just better witnesses. They're just and were prepared for those arguments. It just doesn't seem like the prosecution team in this one is as prepared for that argument because the reality is, I mean, I'm not a lawyer. But the first thing I said is, well, if they're going to go use the if, I would have stood up and said, if she would have grabbed her taser, would Dante Wright be alive right now? And that's a tough question for that officer who's backing her up to have to answer. You know, I can do it too. And so it's interesting. I don't know if they've released a witness list for the prosecution, but is there any hint at how long they're going to be still working their side of the case?
People are kind of expecting them to maybe wrap up as soon as tomorrow. So. Okay. So, I mean, they were hoping, the judge was hoping to have it wrapped up before Christmas, and it sure, unless this defense has just got we have the lists of witnesses, but I think we'll see. I mean, I don't know how many witnesses they will call, but I think it's going to be wrapping up. Well, probably much sooner than we expected.
Yeah, I will say this: if they feel like they've already made their argument, they'll bring Potter to the stand and be done with it. I mean, if the defense team is confident, you'll see a very quick, you know, maybe 2 days for them, and they're done, and then they'll send it to the jury. We'll have to see it like that. But like I said, it's all speculation at this point. So you know, it's speculation is the pure enemy of great journalism. Minnesota Reformer, once again, it is. I'm a trained chimp. I just come here and babble. You guys are the journalists, and you do a great job. Ricardo Lopez, yourself. All you are just fantastic. If you're looking for the best news in town right now, it's Minnesota Reformer, hands down. Hands down, MinnesotaReformer.com. And make sure you donate and keep them going because we need journalism like this, not speculation like this chimp. Dina, thank you very much. You're going to have a new article on this trial coming out a little bit later on?
Yeah, I'm working on it.
All right. When it does come on...
secret, but... Thank you very much for your very kind compliments.
Well, when that article does come on out, I'll make sure I get it posted on social media so people can read about it. Dina Winter from the Minnesota Reformer. Dina, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Take care. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.